you want to explore unique perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media, you are listening to the right channel. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
Sangi la.
Kwe.
Why eat beach snack seal?
Tan she.
Tanet e. Negad dakote.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Tanashi Kia. Hello, and how are you? As our guest today, the Michif writer Katharina Vermette will tell you, Tanashi Kia is such a beautiful phrase because not only does it greet you, but it asks you how you are, how you feel, or how you've come to be here. Sheila Rogers, Dishini Kashun, En Michif Nia. My name is Sheila Rogers, and I am Métis, and I'm honored to be your host for Words and Culture, the Michif episodes. I live in Winnipeg, Treaty 1 territory, and the homeland of the Red River Métis. I moved to Winnipeg from Victoria 2 years ago to connect with my Métis family that I was completely unaware of until I was in my 50s. My father, Bremner Rogers, passed away in 2008. About a year and a half after his death, his sister, my beloved Aunt Heather, brought over a long scroll of the family tree. I noticed that all the men were well documented, where and when they were born and died. They were mostly employees of the Hudson Bay Company, so their lives were recorded. It was a different story for the women. First names, but often no last names, unless they were written down as Phoebe Indian, Mary Cree, or Jane Native. The journalist in me had to find out who these women were. I began my search with one of the great-grandmothers who did have a last name, Nahue Sinclair. A book about her called Nahue, A Distant Voice, was published in 2008. The author was Donna G. Sutherland, who, it turned out, was my Métis cousin. I met up with her in Winnipeg in the fall of 2010, and she took me to the Hudson Bay Company archives, to Nahue's gravesite at St. John's Anglican Church, and to Seven Oaks House, the last place Nahue lived. Nahue was the wife of William Sinclair, a Hudson Bay Company factor. Nahue was the key to finding out about my ancestors, and Donna Sutherland became a great friend. I'll tell you more about her in the weeks to come. But now, I invite you to a soft launch, a preview of a book coming out at the end of September. It's called Procession, and it's by the Michif writer Katharina Vermette. Over the years I spent at CBC Radio, I had the honor of speaking with her many times, from the publication of her early poetry books to her most recent novel, Real Ones, published last year, looking at the theme of family and Métis identity. Katharina Vermette, or as her friends call her, Kate, is our guest today on Words and Culture to share Michif culture and words. Here is Kate Vermette introducing herself.
Tanishi Kia. My name is Kate. Katharina is my full name and kind of where I go in the world. I'm a writer. I identify as Michif. I like to using the word Michif. I am sitting here on Treaty 1 territory. I'm facing the Red River. I am on my beloved homeland and really excited to talk to you.
I'm excited to talk to you as well. And I want to answer your Tanishi Kia with Nimanando. I hope I'm remembering that correctly. I think I'm saying fine. I hope I am. Nimanando.
Nimanado.
Nimanadao. Nimanadao.
Nimanadao. Okay, I don't know. So okay. Either way, you got me. I'm totally convinced.
Oh, no getting. I'm just falling out of the nest here. Falling out of the language nest.
Oh, I hear you.
But why, as you introduced yourself, you said Tanishi Kia, and you have a poem from your beautiful new book, which I've had the honor of reading, called Tanishi Kia. Can you read that for us, and then we can talk about what a beautiful expression it is?
For sure, for sure. And just to intro it a bit, this is a segment of the book where I introduce words in both Machif and Anishinaabe Mohen, and I don't want to translate the word. I want to write a poem explaining what the word is about, and then through that, understanding the meaning of the poem, you understand the meaning of the word. That's the game. That's beautiful. What the goal is. So this is Tanishikia. Not only do I greet you, but I ask how you are, how you feel, or how you have come to be here, or maybe what brought us here, brought us all here. What could make us all so lucky to be? I am so glad to see you, to say these words to you, know them, know you.
It's beautiful, and it's so dimensional. It's not just, hey, hi. It's so much more. And it's about the past, and it's about the present, and it's about everything you carry with you and the future. It's so beautiful, and there's so much in Machif that is like this, but this is a really beautiful beginning. Did you choose it intentionally?
I actually chose those poems because they were the words I was playing with. Those poems were written when I was pregnant with my daughter, and my daughter is Anishinaabe and Machif, and I was learning words that I would share with her. And as I was learning my Anishinaabe Mohen words, which I very diligently have done for many years, I remember years ago I was at Brandon University, and Elder Norman Fleury was there. And I had done that was when I was doing my children's book series called The Seven Teaching Stories, where it is an Anishinaabe Mohen, these are Anishinaabe teachings. And it was Norman Fleury who came up to me and gave me heck. And he's like, where's the Machif? Where's the Machif words? Where is the kids who are named after Machif? Animals, or the children are named after animals. And I've never forgotten that lesson, as you don't. and so I jumped into some very early, like you, I'm a bird falling out of the nest, teachings in Machif. But it's so familiar. Mm. And when I've talked with my auntie and my uncle, who are much older than my dad, my uncle was much older than my dad, and I talked to him about Machif, like, oh, uncle, I'm learning Machif and stuff. And he's like, well, yeah, that we know that. And, oh, yeah, that's what we talked. And he explained some words to me that have always been around in their language and in their talking, in our family. And they didn't call them Machif. They called them just kind of bad French or like slang words. But they've always been intertwined with the French that they spoke. So they were always there. So they were familiar. They sounded familiar to me, and they were familiar to me.
Just to pick up on Norman Fleury, like if Norman was to say, go dig a hole and hop in it, I would do it. he's legendary. And
that's how it felt.
And such a significant person in keeping the language alive. When you say, you know the words were all around you, but you were thinking about certain words. Do you remember what they were?
You know what I remember, and this is from a conversation my uncle was talking. It was a prefix called chi. So he would always say, like, you always say chi boy or chi girl.
Yeah.
Or chi fi. Chi fi was a big one. Chi, I guess it wasn't garçon. I don't remember. It was like a shortened version of boy. But it means little. It's like chi, you know, it's like it's somewhere between sacred and petit, you know, like the French petit, but it's like this little chi. You know, and you use it to mean both big and small, and both endearing, like Gichi in Anishinaabe Mohen means big. It means huge and the big one, the big guy. but also, so it's so funny to me because it means both, right? So it means little, like, in, you know, my beloved, my sweet little chi, but also like my big, important, sacred.
I love that for so many reasons. And I think I came from Ottawa, Algonquin territory, and I used to hear Ti Jean, little Jean, little Jean would be. And so chi just makes sense to me. But I love both big and small. That's really gorgeous. Again, I think it's this amazing long-term thinking that happens in Michif.
Yeah, it's the idea of Michif. When I think of Michif, I think of this language that was constructed around other languages and around all these other folks who were speaking all different languages. So it was seeking to be understood, which I love, because when I think of writing and poetry, well, not so much poetry, because I was a little, you know, trying to be cryptic in poetry sometimes. But when you write and communicate, and as we talk, we seek to be understood, you know, and Michif is this whole language, and Bangi as well, you know, which is more of, it's no longer a kind of an alive language, but that was the same idea, where Michif was a blending of either Cree in French or Anishinaabe Mohan in French. Bangi was Scots language mixed with Anishinaabe Mohan, which is fascinating in itself. But it's the idea of creating something to be understood by as many people as possible. Like, that's so generous. Just the idea of it is generous.
You have a poem called Michif. In many ways, it reflects what you just said, but I'd love it if you could read it.
Okay. Here it is. Michif. Grown of parts older than the whole, twined together like a braid, worn but new. Made for trade, made to transcend otherness, made apart, to be understood by as many people as possible. Not half, but both. Not both, but own.
I love that. I know I have this funny impulse to say, that was Katharina Vermette reading from her new book, Procession. But we don't have to do that, because this is just two chicks chatting. And old habits, they do die hard, though. Kate, this, in a way, this episode is kind of like a book launch, because Procession hasn't come out yet. When is it coming out, by the way?
So it's September 30th.
Okay.
That it's officially out and available. It's my first poetry book in, I think, 8 years.
I felt like when I was reading, it felt like a distillation of so many of your concerns that have risen up in novels. And family, of course, relationships, always a big part of what you write about. And then your dedication, or maybe it's the epigraph, maybe it's both, to this book, which is for those who came before and those who come after. There's a poem that starts everything off called Grimoire that kind of sums this up. Could you read that for us?
A grimoire is actually it's a book of magic. So
yes.
Like a witch's book is called a grimoire, or grimoire, however you want to say it. And that was kind of like what this book of poems felt like to me. You know, it's a summoning of, like, it's a kind of like, it's a journal for all intents and purposes. You know, it's a gathering of thoughts and lessons learned and medicines and magical spells, if you will.
It feels like a book of spells to me. And I think it's, again, it's this beautiful elasticity of the before and the after. How do you carry the before with you?
When I think of the before, I think of the ancestors. I think of those stories. I spent a lot of time in history in the last little while, either through fictitious histories or actual popular history as Michif people in my last few projects. And at once, I think when you look at them, I always think they're so sad. They're so enraging is what they are, because we've gone through so many struggles and so much hardships, and it keeps on happening, and it feels like it never ends. And that's disgusting. Mm-hmm. But I also think there's so much who just like, do not stop and do not sit down and just keep on going when all the odds have been stacked against us. We have risen. And so it brings me back to this incredibly hopeful place, this incredibly proud place. You know, like when I I did a graphic novel series called A Girl Called Echo, and I really wanted to dive into our popular history as Michif people and, these incredible armed insurrections, which at first glance look like they're really devastating, and they were. But, you know, we just kept fighting the government. We just kept, like, they kept coming at us, and we were like, here we go, let's get some guns, let's get organized, let's keep going. You know, there's this vision I have of children at Batoche, you know, gathering bullets in the night. They were going through the grass and gathering all the spent bullets. And what they were doing is they were bringing them back to their mothers and their aunties who were melting them down and making more bullets. Mm. You know, they're melting them down and putting them back into bullet casings so that they can be reused again, so that they're, you know, those who were shooting wouldn't run out of bullets. You know, that's kind of like what we've kept doing in one form or another for so long. And that feels really empowering to me.
Yeah.
You know, knowing how to sing, and everyone was all singing and dancing. We were all known for being like just disruptors and loud partiers and
loud laughers.
Laughers. Not my family. My family was like, no, we didn't do that. Mm. We were quiet. We never had any parties.
Is that so?
Apparently.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that was just their cover story.
I remember you wrote a poem. I can't remember which book it's from, but I think it was called Bury Me at Batoche. Is that mm-hmm. right? Yeah.
Yeah, there is one. You know, one of my morbid poems about death. There's mm-hmm. a few of them.
I haven't been to Batoche until last year, and it was just phenomenal, and it was the Back to Batoche celebration. But when you're actually there and you go to Karen's door and you see the bullet marks, and I mean, I have goosebumps even thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And yet, it's not in a big plot of land, right? This must have been so intimate and so personal and human to human. I mean, it still gives me chills, but... Do you still want to be buried at Batoche?
No, it's not really my territory, so it's kind of imposing on me to say, yeah, put me here. I'll spiritually be buried there. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to be cremated, just so you know. I actually talk about it in Procession, too. Like, I want to be cremated, because I'm also talking about death in the book called Procession, go figure. But maybe I'll get my kids to sprinkle some ashes up there, just for good measure.
Do you want to read the poem, Procession?
Procession the poem.
On page 13. But I know you're looking at a computer, so it doesn't matter.
For those following along in your pages, please turn to page 13. I'm reading off my... I don't have copies yet, so I'm reading off my... screen. Okay, Procession. You are only here to honor your ancestors and prepare for your children. More inclusive version, you are only here to learn from those who came before and make space for those who come after. Those who came before, ancestors, those who come after, children. You are at once burdened by responsibility and made free of it. What they did, what they will do, all we do. Maybe responsibility is the wrong word. Perhaps honor, learn, prepare, make space, before, after. You inherit and you pass on. Only going forward, no. It's the earth that moves, and only in a circle. Sun, moon, time, stay in place. So maybe moving is the wrong word. You only are, at once belong and are belonged to, grounded and spirit. what you were before, children, and what you will be after, ancestor. You are at once only and all.
Thank you for that. That's really lovely. I had this feeling reading Procession that this is about caring, and it's about caring about the ancestors, for the ancestors, for the next generations. But in doing that, you're also caring for yourself.
I think that's something so many of us, me for sure, really came into, like, just recently, just late, like, after so many years of, like, wondering why I wasn't feeling cared for, or why I was exhausted, or any of the other things, right? But to honor yourself, you know, you're an ancestor too, you're a child too, you know, and really taking that space to be as sacred to yourself as possible, to, you know, to love yourself as thoroughly as you can. It took me a really long time to get to that point. I don't know if I'm all the way there yet, but I really do try, and I really do encourage everyone to, yeah, to take that time to, because if anything else, I kind, my little trick of getting myself into it is that the better I'm cared for, the better I can care for others. You know, so then I'm just, it's just a mind trick, because I want to just go and do the caring for others, right? Because that's where I feel like I'm of use in doing something in the world.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So it's like, you know, I'm not, so then I trick myself into caring for myself so I can do a better job.
I would really love you to read the last poem in the book. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's Cree. Peyotik?
Peyotik. I've learned it to pronounce it Peyotik.
Okay.
Peyotik. And I fully understand that I always mispronounce things, and then I get in the habit of pronouncing, and so I end up pronouncing things wrong for years. So please, if I'm mispronouncing it, but I pronounce it Peyotik. And this is a word actually from one of our blessed elders who will be here forever. I just know it. His name is Gregory Schofield. And this word I found in a poem of his. I can't even tell you where I was looking for it, and I couldn't tell you. I couldn't find it, but I know it's from him. It's a Cree word that translates to walk softly, like walk softly on the earth, Peyotik. And I've seen it here and there, and I just love that idea. It's that idea of leaving nothing behind, you know?
Yeah.
And like treasuring where you are. So this was a poem I've actually had, many of the poems in this book I've had for, like, it's been 8 years, but I've also had lots of these poems kicking around for like the last 20, because maybe they didn't go anywhere else. And I've just, or they weren't finished. A lot of times poems aren't finished for like 20 years. Poems are very annoying like that. So this was one of those that, I don't know that it'll ever be finished, but it felt like a perfect ending for this one. For this book. So this is Peyotik. Then one day I realized, if I deny my voice, I deny my grandmother's, my many mothers before my mother. As inadequate as I may be, I am all they have. I am afraid of everything but them. Their flawless spirits, long cleansed in the wind, these ghosts tell good stories in slow, sugary voices. Give them to me. Explain those truths I do not know yet how to say out loud. It's sugar get off the pot time again, they say when I want to give up. Their brown and browned faces fixed on me, their grins the wide prairie sky. Go now, they shoo me along. Be good.
I love being shooed along. I think there's always a good reason to be shooed along, but especially being shooed along and being good. It's such a beautiful place to end your poem, I think, and to end your book. And I think also, I wonder what would have happened if you denied your voice, Kate?
I think if I wasn't writing, I would still be doing something of what I'm doing. I would still be in a helping field. I would definitely be trying ever so hard to be of service all the time, because I have, you know, I think that's where all my value is, right? I don't know what compelled me to, you know, start submitting poems and to, you know, walk into writing groups and just to keep writing. Like, I really, really commend that young person who for doing that, because that was really, given the fact that I had no self-esteem whatsoever, but still kept going and trying to realize the writing dream. Like, it's kind of amazing that she did that, I think.
I'm so glad she did. Your example of finding voice has helped a lot of people find their voice, and I would say myself included. And also not being afraid to connect with history, with the ancestors. And I will never be able to thank you enough for that treasure, but you led me there.
So thank you. I'm glad you're here, cousin.
Well, Kichi Marcy.
Kichi Marcy.
The Michif writer, Katharina Vermette. Kate has won the Governor General's Award, the Amazon First Novel Award, the Bird Award for First Nations, Inuit, and Métis Literature, and the Atwood Gibson Writers' Trust Fiction Prize. She lives in Treaty 1 territory, Winnipeg, the homeland of the Red River Métis. A woman named Annie Bannatyne was one fearless Red River Métis businesswoman. Her sense of justice inspired Kate to write Annie of Red River for the anthology This Place, 150 Years Retold. Annie Bannatyne also inspired the Métis singer-songwriter Amanda Rayom. As we leave you today, here is some of Amanda's song, Annie's Whip. We'll hear more about her story and Amanda's on the next episode of Words and Culture. I'm Sheila Rogers. Kawa Pamatin Mina. We'll see you later.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Hausin Dang King Sam.
Maltis.
Ninwis Ahaha Miku Kwakwal.
Kachunantano.
Wapamatin Mina.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, your alternative to mainstream media. Broadcasting from Simon Fraser University at Burnaby Mountain, British Columbia.
This is Bird Note. Gulls are notorious for snatching French fries from waste bins and flocking to landfills. But one Western gull's devotion to trash reached a new level with an epic road trip. Since 2013, researchers have been tracking Western gulls nesting on islands off San Francisco. Their GPS data show that on average, foraging gulls will travel about 11 miles away from their colonies. Then, in May 2018, a female gull took a trip like no other. She started by flying inland to a Bay Area transfer station. It's a waste facility where food scraps are loaded onto semis and hauled to a compost center in the Central Valley. But the tracking data show that after leaving the transfer station, the gull followed the highway east for 80 miles to that Central Valley composting facility. The only explanation? She was riding a transfer truck. The gull may have gotten trapped in the truck unintentionally, but it delivered her to 216 acres of glorious garbage. And shortly after returning to her colony, she repeated her trek. It's the first time scientists have documented such an unusual commute. But as human activity continues to alter Western gulls' natural habitat, maybe this new approach to dining out will catch on.